much more than most administrations, and it's not really not talked about very much, but we've done actually a lot, but perhaps more has to be done. But this is also a mental illness problem. If you look at both of these cases, this is mental illness. These are really people that are very, very seriously mentally ill.
Yeah, President Trump reacting yesterday to the two different mass shootings that went on. And mass shootings in this country are something that obviously gets our attention, motivates people, gets the dialogue going. They account for maybe 2% of the total amount of gun violence in the nation. Suicide numbers are around 60-something percent that are factored in, and what they would consider below, which is, I think, four and above is a mass shooting. Mm-hmm. Under four is not qualified. It's fairly arbitrary on that number. But those under four account for about 60% or about 40%, 38% of the total shootings. But mass shootings is only 2%, but absolutely they capture the conversation. They capture the attention of Americans when they happen. And two this weekend, of course, one in El Paso and one in Dayton. Those have gotten a lot of people's attention.
Yeah. And, you know, there's discrepancies that kind of lie in that number for what constitutes a mass shooting. And I know so often I've seen news headlines on a Monday morning coming into work, and it says, you know, three or four mass shootings this weekend, and you might not have heard of these mass shootings. And that's because so often if there's a domestic situation and more than four people in a shot in a house are shot, or if there's gang violence somewhere, a lot of times that will count as a mass shooting, a drive-by shooting or something like that. So you see those numbers rising, but it, like the case this weekend, two shootings that happened in places you don't expect to have to worry about, you know, something like this happening in El Paso and then in Dayton, Ohio. And these catch the national attention, and just awful, awful news from this weekend.
It looks like. And here's the problem. So I would report the news, and then you can make comment. I think it's so early. The blame assessment is going on. And what I'm talking about here is not even the push against Walmart and gun sales. It's the question of, should people have known that these two dirtbags were going to go out and murder everybody? You've heard the stories so far. People say, oh, yeah, well, you know, you had the case of the one dirtbag here in Dayton. You've got history, you know, shows a history. The guy who went to El Paso has got a history of this. Who is – if you say, okay, somebody should have seen something, somebody should have seen a pattern – who is responsible for that? That's not a rhetorical question. I think I'm asking it fairly. Who should be responsible for monitoring people like that and saying, okay, and then what do you do? Then what do you do?
Right.
If you see it, I mean, you may have, you know, a lot of people that act that way, and it's just 1% or less than 1% or a tenth of a percent that actually carry it out. How do you get your arms around all those kind of people that, well, this person had some antisocial behavior or whatever it is? How do you get your arms around that?
I don't know. And in the case of this El Paso shooter, you know, you have these dark corners of the internet, like this website 8chan, which was a takeoff on the website 4chan, which I believe was shut down or severely limited after shootings years back. But this website 8chan, where you'll have message boards with pieces of trash like this, who I mean, he's white supremacist. If this manifesto that was uploaded to 8chan turns out, and they're trying to confirm that the shooter in this El Paso shooting, that this was his manifesto that he uploaded to 8chan prior to going on the shooting. But you have these dark corners of the web, and I would think it's impossible for even law enforcement to keep up with all these different things. Apparently, though, the FBI was aware of the El Paso shooter's manifesto being uploaded prior to his shooting. The problem was they weren't able to find his target fast enough and to shut down the shooting before it happened. He's from Dallas, the Dallas area, Allen, Texas, and traveled down to El Paso, more than 600 miles away, to do this awful, awful shooting, and FBI not able to react fast enough. But I don't know the answer to that, how you're able to kind of police this and know what's going on in all corners of the web at all times.
Obviously, if somebody sees something obvious here, they report it. Law enforcement could move in if they had a specific target. Absolutely. But how many of these people follow through with this? And then what happens here? If now, you know, and it's not now, but it's been happening for a while, but we get better and better at monitoring this kind of of course, this is just speech, but this kind of speech out there, get better at monitoring it. Do you think that it goes somewhere else? Or even, okay, do I think that there's some things that are reinforced or thoughts that are reinforced by the web? And because you can go out on the web and find, I mean, it's one of the beauties and it's one of the sadnesses of the web. You can find people globally that are interested in just what you're interested in.
Right.
Like I've said, the days of having to watch variety shows and things everybody, you know, that just kind of somewhat appeals to everybody are gone. I don't have to do that. I can go immerse myself in a rabbit hole on YouTube of exact shows or documentaries that just I'm hyper-focused in. And that's the beauty of the web. You can find enough people, maybe not in your town, maybe not in your city, that are interested in what you're interested in, but you open it up to a national or global perspective. There's tons of people that think like you, right? But one of the darknesses of that is the same thing, that they find people that reinforce their thought process. But I would question here, let's say the folks realize they're being monitored, these kind of dirtbags are being monitored. Do you think if they can't post something and post a manifesto, they don't do it?
That's a good question. You know, how much are they motivated by other
some
people?
Some kind of infamy, or I mean, if they didn't have a manifesto posted, if this guy, for some reason, let's go in the time machine and we don't have the web somehow. Dirtbag number one, El Paso dirtbag. If dirtbag number one doesn't have a place to post his manifesto, does he not go murder all those innocent people in the Walmart?
That's a really good question. We all know of, you know, weird people that we grew up around. There's always somebody in the town that you grow up in that you and your parents and neighbors say, you know, watch out for that one. He's got something off, or watch out for her. She's got something off there. But, you know, in this day and age, like you said, you can find a message board for anything. And a lot of these people that have just wrong beliefs and awful beliefs and want to kill other humans because they believe, in this guy's case, it appears he is a white supremacist. And he talked about that in these posts. I don't know how much he was led on through these message boards, if he had people that were cheering him on. It seems like a lot of like-minded people agreed with what he was saying, but he's the only one that went out and carried out this shooting.
But if he did, that's what I'm asking, and I'm sure it's different for every case, but if he didn't have that sounding board, does that change whether he goes and does it or not? And I know that that's going to be a tough one to define, because I'm sure for each individual dirtbag, the motivation, the level of coercion is different. So I don't know. From the text line here, Jeremy says, we need to recognize the warning signs. It's up to every one of us. It's up to social media. If these guys are ranting, we as a country need to take the things leading up to shootings seriously. Every shooting, there's at least one person who knew what was going to happen, who knew the signs. A term in my job, if you see something, say something. Right. If you take it away from them, does it stop them, Jeremy? And I know it'd have to be case by case. Crypto Marine says on the text line, in the 1970s, the government made it harder to commit someone to a mental institution. Since then, mass shootings have gone up exponentially in the number of people who have – of those people who have mental problems. You know, I know you can look at it at a state level, and I'm not saying that this ties in with any kind of mass shooting, but state of Alabama, back during the Bentley administration, really backed off on the amount of state money that went into mental institutions, right? We had a lot of people that should be institutionalized that end up kind of going to jail, or, you know, and being kept there because there's not a facility for them. Like in our area, when they closed Searcy, there's other facilities where they're housed. But talking to mental health officials and talking to law enforcement over the years, they said it was a bad thing when that happened.
Yeah,
a real bad thing.
And, you know, this, there's so many things that go into something like this El Paso shooting or the Dayton shooting. You talk about mental health, what role that played. Also, the prevalence of prescription drugs and what they actually do. To minds, you know, there's no one really knows what some of these drugs, how someone will react to them all the time. And we've seen so many cases where you could almost say the drugs played a part in it, but also heightened racial tensions and, I don't know, a lot more violence out there in video games and movies.
Back to the heightened racial tension thing, too. Is that something that is created by media out there? I mean, I often say I'm told how we're supposed to feel, and I look around and my friends who look all different kind of ways, we're all just the same as we were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But we'll talk with you when we get back. 343-0106, 343-0106. Thank you, Kane. 820 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Sean and Dalton. Dr. Bill's got our forecast coming up in just a second. And to the phones and text line, phone first. Matt is in Fairhope, and he's first up. Hey, Matt.
Good morning, Sean. Hey, I wanted to talk briefly about the mass shooting. I believe I have a handle on what, you know, the problem is. It's a socioeconomic problem. And, you know, the two parts of obviously the social problem being, Sean, if you look at yourself and myself and when we were growing up, I'll bet you that most of the people that you knew had a parent in the home. Now, mm-hmm. keep in mind, I'm not advocating that one parent must be at home at all times, or that women need to get back into the kitchen or anything sexist like that. Please, let nobody misunderstand this. But the point is, the majority of people had a parent at the home, and when you went outside or when you got home from school, your mother kicked you out of the house to go play, and the neighbors, you know, mothers, wives, et cetera, all watched you. Well, the economic issue is, in order to afford the same type of lifestyle now that our parents did, it requires both incomes from two parents working 40 hours a week. So who's left to watch these kids and to make sure that they're brought up correctly? That being said, the an extra little throw-in would be, I'm pretty sure that most of the, you know, 50% of the people that we knew, Sean, growing up, also were in church on Sunday, or synagogue, or temple, or what have you, and I would venture to guess that that percentage has dropped dramatically since our own childhoods. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, we need to have mandatory go to church on Sundays, but for my atheist friends and whatnot out there, you're fine believing or not believing what you want to believe, but you have to admit that the world was a better place when more people, regardless of what religion they chose, led a faith-based life.
Well, and I'll say this, there's the idea that mass shootings are something brand new is not accurate. Remember, we've looked at this before, even like back to the 1950s, there was a huge one up in Michigan, I think, if I remember correctly going through. But their prevalence has increased for sure, honestly, has increased. And the amount of time cable news and those of us in talk radio and all that spend talking about it maybe wouldn't have happened back then at the level. It would have been a big story in whatever city or town it was, but maybe not nationally like it is today. And we get this idea, we get the built-up impact of all these things happening, and they seem like they happen in our backyard when they happen a nation away.
Yes, that's true. And, how long did the Kent State shooting, how long did that play on the local news down here in Mobile versus if that happened today?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
on every channel
yeah.
all day, and they bring in experts who really don't know anything because they don't know what the motive was, if there was a rationale behind it, if the person, had some sort of an issue, whatever that may be. It's just kind of, strange to see somebody, clamoring for airtime, where they're going to go ahead and put somebody on the air, a supposed expert who, until you know the facts of a situation, how can you be an expert on it?
There you go. Matt, I agree. Let's go to Max in Bell Forest. Hey, Max.
Hey, I agree with everything that Matt said, but I'd add this to it, that, he said that the parent out of the home after school, well, the kids are being raised on video games. That drives me nuts, seeing the kind of violence on video games is just unmonitored, and people become numb to it. That's not why I called. I actually want to talk to you real quick about the social media aspect of trying to, read the chicken bones and figure out who's going to be the next mass shooter and who's not. My question to you is, where's the flash to bang to that? I mean, at what point is the social media platform going to initiate some type of cry to law enforcement? And what are they supposed to do? Not yet, somebody putting a MAGA hat on their social media page, or is that line at where they publish their manifesto?
Max, that's what I'm talking about. You're spot on. That's my question. When we say, okay, well, there were these warning signs and he posted a manifesto. How much policing do we expect and do we tolerate? I mean, if somebody says something out there, that's the thing. I mean, it's if somebody says, hey, I'm going at 3:00 this afternoon to shoot up so-and-so, okay, I get it, man. You got to shut that down. But if you say these people are having antisocial behavior or post online, Is that the responsibility of law enforcement to find every person that has something antisocial to say online and then go investigate it? I mean, heck, we police departments already can't afford to do the things they have to do, you know, just away from the web.
What annoys me about it is, you know, an incident like this occurs, everybody wants to paint it with a broad brush. Politicians get up and say the same thing on both sides of the aisle every time. Mm-hmm. You know, prayers for you. This is a, you know, we need more gun control, blah, blah, blah. And it's the same shtick every time. But it's a unique situation. They want to just broad brush it. And every situation is unique to the individual.
We had a great intelligent call there, Max. I appreciate it. And that's the, you know, that's the frustration. People want it to be like, you know, they want it to be like a prescription. If we do this one thing, that'll fix it. Because, I mean, imagine that any American, any person out there that has, you know, has heart is heartbroken for, mm-hmm. for families when this happens. And you want to say, oh, I got the solution. And maybe there's not a solution.
Yeah, maybe not. And I'm surprised, though. FBI actually knew about this El Paso shooter's manifesto. They just weren't able to stop it in time. So I think that law enforcement, they actually have their ears to the ground and are monitoring a lot more than we actually think that they are.
Right.
But still, talk about something that's impossible. We talked about people that want to take all guns off the street. With the amount of guns that are already in the hands of criminals and law-abiding citizens everywhere, that's next to impossible. But also, if we're going to start trying to shut down parts of the internet, I mean, talk about impossible. There are so many ways around that. And
then
just,
these people, let's say you shut it down to where they would – you're telling me if they can't post something on social media, they don't commit their dirtbag murder spree.
Yeah, just like you know, making anything illegal, somebody will find a way around that if they want it badly enough. And like the last caller mentioned, everybody, as soon as something like this happens, everybody jumps to their sides of the political aisle.
Says the same thing.
And you know, both these shootings this weekend had a political tint to both of them, because you had this guy in the El Paso shooting who straight up in his manifesto said that he wanted to kill illegal citizens. That's what his plan was. But then you go to the Dayton, Ohio shooting yesterday, or on Sunday. And on his Twitter page, he describes himself as a leftist and says, "I want socialism, and I'll not wait for the idiots to finally come around to understanding." Now, I don't know if that's extremism on both sides. And I don't know if that's what if he carried out that shooting on behalf of whatever his leftist beliefs are. But you see, in both of these shootings, there's a political angle to both.
Let's go to the phones. And Walt is in Somerdale. Hey, Walt.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
To get back to the previous caller talking about, you know, the social media aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
You know, that goes on a lot now already. The, you know, the most popular Facebook, I have a page that about three or four times a day I'll get blocked from something I put up, and it's not something that's blocked from other people, but it gets blocked on my firearms page.
Yep.
You know, is that, I mean, that kind of censorship goes on now. So basically I'm saying, you know, who's going to be in control of that?
Right.
Who's going to watch it?
And if they are, if you take control of something, aren't you some de facto responsible for it?
Yes, that's the next point. If you're going to block it, if you're going to block mine, then block everybody's.
Right, and
don't
then what,
just block mine because you don't like what I say.
And then what's the responsibility if you're blocking? You're saying if you're the gatekeeper, what's your responsibility for any kind of information that comes out that you block or you don't block? You block this one, but you didn't block this other one, and then somebody went out and did something because of the unblocked. I mean, it's Pandora's box if you open that.
Yeah, and the next thing too is, you know, don't blame me. Don't blame, you know. Don't blame Sean Sullivan, and don't blame me, and don't blame the other, you know, 450 million Americans that own firearms that didn't, you know, my stuff didn't jump out of the cabinet, go do anything to anybody. So it's not the gun. It's
right.
The idiot that pulls the trigger. You know, 3,000 people were killed in New York on 9/11 without a gun.
Yep. Well, here's what we got to appreciate the call, as always, Walt. We got to figure out a way to better the you've got two axes, right? You have the line of desire to hurt and the ability to hurt. Where those two lines cross, That's where you got to watch. But where is that? I can't imagine the frustration and of being in law enforcement trying to vet these things out before they happen. It must just be a never-ending task that you're gonna end up failing on by the nature of it. All right, coming right back to the phones. Y'all hold on. 343-0106.
836 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Coming back to the phone lines in just a minute, 343-0106. If you want to call and hop on the line, that works for texts. Also, right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. Good morning. Happy Monday morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, too. Let's talk this morning about the McConnell experience and how shopping at McConnell Automotive is different than any other dealership.
Well, buddy, I hope it is. You know, the difference for us, Dalton, is we've been around since 1955, and we want to be around another 60 years. And we know the only way to do that is to not give our customers the kind of experience that, if they're honest, they've had at a lot of dealerships. You know, a lot of pressure, a lot of hassle, and disappointment. So if people would just give us a shot, if you're listening, you've had a bad experience shopping or a bunch of bad experiences, we just think, don't we try to take care of people. It's all about transparency, relationships, and honesty. But we also feel like we give the best prices on Buick and GMC anywhere in Alabama on the Gulf Coast. And right now, if they go to our website, they're going to see some killer deals. The new truck is 20% off, and it's just so easy to get those savings, Dalton. And you know, we're proud of what we do. We have six different SUVs, pretty much from the Yukon down to the little Buick Encore. And by the way, right now, Dalton, we got 20% off the little Buick Encore. So you're talking about a brand new SUV you can get for around $20,000. And those are the kind of deals we try to give customers every single day, buddy.
That's some great stuff. We appreciate it, Mitch.
Y'all have an awesome day.
That's Mitch McConnell. Check out the website, McConnellAutomotive.com, or go see him in person at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
We're at 837 FM Talk 106.5. So we go to the phones, but I want to pose a question here, too. If you haven't hopped on, maybe you can help me with this. So as we look at the different components here, I think we agree that it's not one thing,
mm-hmm.
right? At least I agree. Maybe you disagree that there's – I don't think there's just one thing that leads to these dirt bags murdering, you know, people. But I – okay, so if you believe – like people say that it's driven by the president, right? President Trump, that you have this increase because President Trump. But you just pointed out that over the weekend, one person, one dirtbag, white supremacist, the other one, socialist,
right.
liberal. Okay. So let's let's have that fact in the mix, so it's 50-50. But let's go back to the first one. Just the same way I asked, do you think if there wasn't an ability to post on social media or on some page out there, a manifesto, would the person not commit the crime? I asked the same question here. Do you believe that dirtbag number one, the El Paso dirtbag, if President Trump hadn't tweeted things about the squad, which I still go back to the definition of racism and bigotry, and I don't know that those are. I think it was inaccurate because three of the four that he was talking about actually were born in the United States. But do you think that if that tweet wouldn't have gone out or something, that this dirtbag wouldn't have gone and killed these people? I mean, is it that people, oh, it's the president that's causing it. Really?
Mm-hmm.
That the mental state is so fragile that because he tweeted something, somebody changed completely what they would do? Would this, if that tweet had not gone out, would we not be talking about this morning? Leaves me scratching my head there.
I can't say that if Twitter wasn't a thing, if there weren't online message boards like 8chan that this white supremacist in the El Paso shootings uploaded his manifesto, I can't say that he wouldn't have done this anyway, but it can't help. And, you know, I spend a lot of time – I spend most of my time during the day online looking for stories and mm-hmm. seeing what the conversation's like. And I'll tell you, when I leave work and I'm just around my friends and family and even around people I don't know – you know, the tensions never get that high. Most
right.
people are friendly when you meet them face to face. And it's
right.
the same in neighborhoods forever, and it has been. Now, there are people that are problems in neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
but if they didn't have this special little corner of the internet to go to and have some of their beliefs confirmed when most normal people around them in the neighborhood probably would not confirm those beliefs,
mm-hmm.
I think that it doesn't help that they have that little community to go to.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Solomon in Mobile first up. Hey, Solomon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great show, fellas.
Thank you.
Is my phone coming in pretty decent here?
Loud and clear.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. You know, I think President Trump called called this thing right square on the head. When you're looking at mental illness, you know, you sit down here and you look at the commitments that we're making in Mobile County for mentally ill people. We're spending like $57 million in Mobile County with AltaPoint, and it's just a phenomenal aspect of the budget. And people are really not getting well. Like an accident if they get cured, you know. So
is that do the stats bear that out, Solomon? Do you have some stats on that?
Yeah, you just sit down there in the courthouse and watch how many times these same people been brought back. Well, I'm getting committed for the fifth time. Well, this one's getting committed for the third time, and they go see these doctors. And one of the other problems with these psychiatrists is, you know, when you do a PET scan, you know, on a brain and positive emission tomography, and, you know, a brain will look a certain way. Then when you give the patient some of these neurotransmitter things, it's like you lit their whole brain on fire. And these drugs are running around harming our society much more than they're helping.
Which drugs do you think cause this?
Oh, they're what are they? Dopamine inhibitors. There's two or three kinds. They keep coming out with new ones every year because it's such a profitable thing. But it doesn't take much in the way of research. You know, a couple of years ago, I could have told you exactly what they were, but,
No, and I think, Solomon, I appreciate the call. I mean, it's part of the discussion, but the same way I would challenge somebody who says it's all the fault of gun laws in states to give me specific examples of what they would change in the gun law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I tell you this right now, you're going to hear a lot about it this week. President Trump, I mean, remember my distaste for what happened with the bump stocks,
mm-hmm.
because I think people need them to be able to commit crimes, but it's the idea of a retroactive banning of a piece of polycarbonate is problematic to me. Same thing here. There's going to be an increased push for something to happen. They'll have to extract something. There'll have to be something given up in Second Amendment rights. And, you know, maybe in the case of these dirtbags that should be on a watch list for guns, the situation won't be specific to them. It'll be something blanket and bigger that we won't ever know that it makes any difference at all, even though it does erode Second Amendment rights.
And the president, he's speaking in right around 16 minutes. He's supposed to talk about these two mass shootings over the weekend, but he's been tweeting this morning, and from just before 6 a.m. our time, he tweeted, "We cannot let those killed in El Paso and Dayton, Ohio die in vain. Likewise for those so seriously wounded. We can never forget them and those many who came before them. Republicans and Democrats must come together and get strong background checks. Perhaps marrying this legislation with desperately needed immigration reform. We must have something good, if not great, come out of these two tragic events."
You know what's interesting is the human condition. When you group and brand a shooting as a mass shooting, it gets our attention more. I mean, look at our state. In Alabama this weekend, we had multiple shootings in Tuscaloosa and Montgomery, here in Mobile, Birmingham. You know, you had these, but they don't garner the attention of a mass. And I don't know if it's the numbers or the seemingly random nature of it that grabs the national attention. And of course, when there's a national discussion going on, they'll use that as leverage for, you know, trying to change laws out there.
Yeah. And like it or not, the storyline plays into what gets national attention. Also, you have these two mass shootings in places that you wouldn't expect to have bullets flying. Now, you can't say the same about some neighborhoods outside.
There's a big shooting in Chicago over the weekend.
Yeah, Chicago, but that happens all the time, and that's why it doesn't get the same attention.
All right, 343-0106, that's our number. Let's go to David in San Francisco. Hey, David.
A couple of different things that crossed my mind about this. You know, if you read the Second Amendment, says that a well-regulated militia. Now, what part of however young this kid was, and he's out there just buying a gun, and then he starts shooting up the joint. There's no well-regulated about that. And in fact, I'm old enough to remember when Kennedy was assassinated, Oswald was supposed to have used a fake name to buy a rifle, and God, he got it cheap, too. It was like $15 for a rifle, mail order from Chicago down to Dallas, that he got a mail order rifle and then used that to kill Kennedy. Now, if they haven't figured out in 60 years that well-regulated means you don't sell guns over the, you know, through the mail to an anonymous guy.
Yeah, you don't do that anymore. There's no selling of guns that don't go through an FFL. And why is it that, when the shooting issues come in that you chime in from San Francisco? I've been wondering that. I mean, a couple times a year,
no,
if this
I'm
happens.
Talking
about well-regulated and I'm talking about, no,
so
David,
now, if
David.
You're going to be a neocon,
David.
What about insurance?
David, hold on. First
insurance,
of all.
Insurance, is that
David,
a well-regulated?
David, first of all. Neocon is about the last thing that I am. I get, you know, I get called isolationist a bunch, but neocon is not me.
Well, really, neocon artist is what,
what
those little boys are.
What?
You know, if the NRA got $60 million,
let's let David go
Russia,
here. Go, David. Go. Riff. It's all you. Go.
$60 million from Russia,
uh-huh,
to push this stuff at a time when all these shootings start to emerge.
Uh-huh.
$60 million, and the NRA all of a sudden has Oliver North as its president. And then he resigns suddenly, and they go to jump to another. These guys, there's a coup in the works. They got no insurance on all these millions of guns that are being sold. You guys talk your, you know, market forces this and market forces is that. What's a regulated, well-regulated militia with no insurance?
You finished?
No.
But
have at it with that one. You know, you want to talk as if you're some smart guy from the South that knows better than anybody else, and then all of a sudden you don't even have an answer for well-regulated militia and having an insurance policy.
You hadn't taken a GD breath, my friend. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In other words, the individual citizens have the right to the weaponry to be able to be organized into a well-regulated militia. This has been debated in the Supreme Court. Now, I know at Haight-Ashbury that maybe this is not what you're talking about, but David, come on, man. You are like a one-trick pony. It's like every time one of these things comes up, you chime in from San Francisco. So, dude, I'll give you time. But I do take offense to one thing. Neocon, I'm not. Tell everybody out on the West Coast I said hello. It's early, too, man. You're up early to call us, man. I appreciate that. All right, 850. FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I'm not saying that you've got junk. Okay, you have junk around your house, your office. Maybe you got a storage unit. I mean, how many years have you been cutting that check every month to pay for the storage unit? Do you know what's in there? Is there a better chance that one of those people on that, what's this stupid show where they guess what's in the storage
unit? Storage Wars.
Storage Wars. That Storage Wars people would have a better idea of what's in your storage unit than you do. It's time to get rid of it. And you do that very quickly when you call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I love it because they make an appointment time. Specific day, specific time. They realize you like have a job and a life and those things. They meet you at that time. They quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get the junk gone. Yeah. It's just that easy. 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. National company, big great name. But my buddy Trey, local franchisee, 11 years doing this in Mobile and Baldwin County. Make sure to reach out and get him to your pile of junk. Not saying you do have a pile of junk. 1-800-GOT-JUNK online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, to the phones and Janet in Mobile. First up, hey, Janet.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have no solution to the problem because it's so large that there's more than one solution that's needed. But I do have a basic start, and I think the first thing we can do is have our leaders change their bickering and attitude toward one another. And the reason I say that is because we as a people look to our leaders to provide us with guidance, whether they realize it or not. And we tend to do what they do because they show us it's okay. It worries me that our politicians have gotten so hateful that they can't run the country. And in closing, I'd like to say that I'm a child of the 50s, and I have listened to the news all my life because my father did. And I remember seeing politicians on TV stand before a podium telling one group of people that another group of people is responsible for their plight. That wasn't a solution. It was to divide and conquer. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Hey, well said, Jen. I appreciate your call. The tenor of the rhetoric, if we're going to put all the things in, and see, I agree with Janet that there's so many different things. People say, oh, it's just one thing. If you change it, this won't happen. I don't believe that. Somebody could prove it to me, but right now I don't believe that. But one thing that you have to put on that list, I agree with Janet, and I lament this all the time, is that the tenor of the rhetoric coming out of – that people want it to be – I've said this before. It's tribalist. And listen, politics has always been a blood sport. I mean, since the founding of our republic. But this idea that people aren't as much aligned with the Constitution and freedom in the United States as they are with their party. It's almost like teams. You know, it's like – and you'll never admit fault to your team, and you'll never accept that something the other team says may make some sense. And it doesn't mean you have to change your opinion, but when it's true and you feel that way, then express it.
Right.
And this idea, it's all like from a simplistic movie that everybody's completely bad and everybody's the other side's completely good. It's foolish and childish.
Is. And there's so many things that, you know, go into this problem and these specific shootings. We don't know what was going on in the heads of either of these shooters in Dayton, Ohio, or El Paso, but you get a pretty good idea from the El Paso shooter's manifesto that he apparently uploaded on 8chan that he was out to kill Mexicans. He was out to kill illegal immigrants in this. But you see both sides of the political aisle. Like you said, there's teams. Everyone runs to their team right when this happens. And a good point was made earlier about mental health, and Cher has been texting on the text line, and she makes a good point too. We can't immediately point the finger at one thing, and we can't immediately point the finger at mental health, although if you look at these, you have to think somebody that's willing to go out and murder as many people as possible, there has to be something going wrong inside of their heads. But once you don't know the answer 2 days out. You don't know why these people did that. And by the time we get some answers, these stories are old and gone. And we've moved on to the next phase of the media top stories. And then we don't go back and say, okay, what medicine were each of these guys on? Did they have diagnosed mental health issues? Did they carry out this shooting in the name of whoever or whatever? We never go back and truly go into detail about what caused these things and what can be done to make them different.
Let's go back to the phones. And Cindy is in Mobile. Hey, Cindy.
Good morning. How are you all today?
Well, I've been better, Cindy.
Yes, I know. I am a health professional, and I do agree that mental health is not – we do not have a good system for mental health. But the one question that I have is we learn from our history and try to move forward, right?
I hope.
Can you tell me where the most strict gun laws are right now in the United States?
By state or by municipality? I would say, by state, Illinois and California, I think, right? I think Illinois and California.
Those rank pretty highly.
Yes. And so with Illinois, I mean, how many shootings happen in Chicago every day?
Mm-hmm.
And they have the most strict gun laws anywhere.
Illegal guns.
It's
illegal
not
guns coming.
Solve it. It gives, the bad people have the guns and the good people don't. Themselves. So I do agree that we need to do something, but they do not need to infringe on our right to bear arms because I have the right to protect myself.
There you go, Cindy. I appreciate it. What we have to do, if we can ever figure out how to do it, is to have one of these people that wants to cause harm to innocent people prevent them. Yeah, and you're not going to prevent every one of them from getting a gun. But what do you do while still respecting Second Amendment rights? Can we do it? Like many of us have said in the past, we could start with enforcing the laws that are already on the books fully and make sure we're doing a good job of that. Hey, we'll pick up this conversation again at noon today for Midday Mobile. The president's going to speak. We'll get that audio for you. If you don't catch it, we'll get the audio for you at noon today.